It gives Colorado the flexibility CPW and legislators were seeking to have the full complement of non-lethal and, in rare and specific cases, lethal tools to manage wolves in Colorado. CPW also commenced an intensive public outreach process to communicate with communities, stakeholders, ranchers, and others in areas in the region where wolves were likely going to be introduced as outlined in the plan. The goal of this outreach was to prepare these communities for wolves in the landscape, educate them on the plan and resources, what was available for ranchers to reduce conflict with wolves, and answer any questions. In late December, 10 wolves were captured in Oregon, and they were reintroduced on the West Slope in Colorado, in particular in Summit and Grand County. These were a tremendous effort by our team, would not have been possible without the tireless effort of CPW staff and the Parks and Wildlife Commission and members of both our advisory boards and citizens and stakeholders who engaged and weighed in to make our wolf management plan the best for all Coloradans and for wolves. And again, that is our blueprint, the wolf management plan that spells out exactly how we move forward and what we do and how we manage wolves. I understand in conversations with many of you that we did not meet the expectations of our notification on the process of releasing wolves to legislators, ranchers, and others in the area. We understand these concerns and were able to make adjustments after that first release. So my sincere apologies for not getting that right for the expectations that many of you had. However, I want to state that DNR and CPW knew that reintroducing wolves would be a very complex undertaking. Our first priority of introducing wolves was the safety of our staff and the safety and the well-being of wolves. On that metric, I believe that we were successful, and I give full credit to CPW Director Jeff Davis, Assistant Director Reed DeWalt, and his team. Jeff and Reed are here today to answer any specific questions you may have right after this. We also understand that we can learn from our mistakes and do it better as we align with expectations and the cadence of notifications in the future. To that end, CPW is in the process of finalizing an after-action review to gather input on the wolf releases. We appreciate the many of you that have already engaged with us and with CPW to offer the feedback on what you believe went well and what you believe did not go well. And I want to tell you, we're really taking those into heart, and we really appreciate you reaching out, whether it's through letters or picking up the phone or whatever it may be. We appreciate your feedback. Additionally, and after-action reviews are very common in wildfire scenarios and other areas, so we can learn a lot from this. Additionally, CPW has been working in close coordination with the Department of Agriculture to ensure that the state has the resources needed to employ non-lethal wolf management measures within the goal of to minimize wolf depredation and livestock loss. To date, there have been no livestock depredation of any of the reintroduced wolves. However, we remain committed to being responsive to future depredation reports and appreciate the legislator's support in establishing the dedicated fund for depredation compensation. So we really appreciate that. So thank you. Finally, I'm happy to report that we've come to an agreement with the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation in Washington State to source up to 15 additional wolves with the plans to release those on December of 2024 and March 2025. As CPW announced, this concludes our wolf introductions for this season. The wolf management plan says that we can introduce 10 to 15 wolves, but Director Davis has felt like let's start with 10 and really make sure we have the right data, make sure we're responsive to everyone on the line on the landscape, and I think that was a good decision to make. This year, one of our budget requests also looked to shift 6 FTE we had devoted to developing the wolf plan to actual implementation of the plan, including work with CDA on conflict minimization program. And we think that the additional capacity will really strengthen the existing efforts to support the ranching community and others who face conflicts on wolves. So just in closing, you know, I went through a lot of information, and we are just busy working on, whether it's wolf reintroduction or water policy, forest health mitigation, you name it. I'm happy to maybe move right into questions that I know maybe you have on wolves, if that's all right, Madam Chair, if you'd like that, or I have a whole team in back of me that we can focus on any questions that you have. So with that, however you'd like to proceed, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Director Gibbs. Yeah. And unfortunately, I know we are on a time schedule, and it has to do with the fact that some committee smart hearings were shut out of their ice cold day last week. So that, just so everyone knows, that this is atypical for us to be on this kind of time crunch. So yes, thank you, Director Gibbs, and for everyone from your department that has come today. You're absolutely right. There are quite a few questions. So we will move right to that stage. And thank you for not taking the whole hour so that we'll have more time for questions, because I think we can go a little longer, and I think we're going to need to. Yeah. So with that, I will go with the list that I had already started and turn the questioning over to Senator Roberts.
And Madam Chair, if I can really quick, just for how I have my team here, would you prefer to focus on wolf-related questions first?
I think so. And thank you for saving the best for last in your presentation. So there's bring up the team, and we'll get going.
And again, we have water, and we have water.
We have parks.
So we're ready for anything.
Yeah, yeah, I know you are. Thank you, Senator Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually, I have some questions about wolves and water. So before I pass the mic, I don't know who you have here for water. I would like them to come up as well. First of all, I just want to start with a thanks to all the work that you do, Director Gibbs, and your department as a whole. You know, I have the honor of representing some parts of the state where DNR is the most important department, and you know, I appreciate all the work that the many staff across the state do. So thank you for that, and wanted to express my gratitude. The district that I represent includes Grand and Summit counties, as you know, where the first wolves were reintroduced. So I do have some questions about that. And thank you, Director Davis and Mr. DeWalt, for being here. Director Davis, two of the wolves that were introduced in Grand County, shortly after the reintroduction, it was reported using public data from Oregon that came from packs that had a very recent history of depredation. You and Mr. DeWalt testified in front of the Senate or the Water Resources and Agriculture Review Committee on September 12th of 2023. Do you recall being there for that testimony? And we're going to die. We're the chair. I guess I'm the chair now. So we're dialogue is fine. Yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, too.
Oh, Jeff Davis, director of Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
Okay. And do you recall testifying in front of the Water Resource and Agri Review Committee on September 12th of 2023?
I do, Senator.
Okay. A transcript of that testimony, it says in that you testified that in fully implementing our plan, which means not getting wolves that have a history. And then you continued, I believe that there are enough wolves probably between those two states that we will get our hands on wolves that don't have a history. And a history of depredation, I think you were referring to. Based on the reports of the source of the wolves and the history of the packs from which they came, do you believe that your testimony on September 12th is accurate to what happened on December 18th when those wolves were reintroduced into Colorado?
I do, and I'm happy to explain.
Please go ahead.
So I think sometimes people forget that these are carnivores. And there's a fallacy. Some people do. There's a fallacy that if we were to go get wolves from a place like a wilderness that has never seen livestock, that they would never depredate on livestock. And I think that's a fallacy. When I testified in that hearing, it was not necessarily clear to me that we were talking about depredation versus chronic depredation. And that's the piece where we were following our plan and not taking wolves from packs that have a chronic depredation history.
Thank you for that, Mr. Davis. But didn't Oregon call the packs that those wolves came from chronically depredating?
That is not my understanding.
Okay. That was the reporting in the Colorado Sun that they were considered chronically depredating under Oregon's definition. And we'll get to the definition of chronically depredating shortly. But can you definitively say that Colorado did not release wolves into Colorado that have a history of chronic depredation?
Yes, that's correct.
And is there any reason to believe that the wolves that were sourced from Oregon were done so in a way that was rushed in order to meet an artificial deadline of December 31st, 2023? And if we had waited, we could have found wolves with a better history of depredation?
I would say that's not accurate. The window that we had with all of the contractors that we needed in order to pull off the operation in Oregon in particular, that was the window. So there was no rush to get them out before December 31st. Another window would have popped up here next week, for example. So it's not like we just have contractors waiting for us to call them and pull off an operation like this.
Okay. Mr. DeWalt, you were also present testifying in front of the Water Resources and Agriculture Review Committee. And I was heartened to hear your testimony that day where you said comments such as regarding the notification to people in the surrounding area that you said, quote, "and the hope would be that the day of we'd call them and say we are releasing wolves in this area, quote, so it won't be like a surprise. They'll know that they're in the area." And then, quote, "we'll do our best to make sure they know. Those relationships are super valuable to us with those landowners. We're not going to pull a gotcha or surprise on anyone." Mr. DeWalt, but prior to the reintroduction on the afternoon of December 18th, were county commissioners in Grand County notified that that was about to happen?
Thank you. And just for the record, Reed DeWalt, Assistant Director of the CPW. That day, to my knowledge, they were notified after the releases, but they were notified prior to the releases through CCI meetings and meetings at the county level.
The Grand County commissioners were notified that the releases were going to happen in Grand County before
not
they happened?
Not in Grand County specifically, I'm sorry, but in Eagle, Summit, and Grand Counties. That's always been our communication.
Okay. Were any county or town employees in Grand County notified prior to reintroduction?
I am unaware that that happened.
Okay. And most importantly, were any ranchers, including the landowners and ranchers that you referred to in your September 12th testimony, notified prior to the release on December 18th?
I am unaware that that happened. Now, I personally notified the state director of the BLM, which is one of the major landowners close to where that released, and that happened that morning.
So is it fair to say that the testimony you gave on September 12th didn't accurately reflect what actually happened on December 18th as far as notification?
I would characterize it that part of the testimony you just stated didn't, but there's other parts of that testimony that did accurately reflect the communication.
Okay. And then for anybody on the panel, as far as the release on that day, why were no local reporters invited to the release? We're dialoguing. Go ahead.
I'm happy to answer that. We, as you can imagine, this has garnered a lot of local, state, national, and international attention, to say the least. And so it was decided to, instead of pick winners and losers, to reach out to the Colorado Broadcasters Association to say, you know, hey, we want to pool certain media outlets and you give us who you want. So it was determined that there'd be one person from radio. It was also determined that there'd be one person from the Associated Press, because that's, of course, you know, national news, and then one person that represents West Slope. And so I don't have the exact names of the entities, but there were three different media outlets that reflect that it wasn't CPW that said, hey, I'm picking this one or that one. It was really the Colorado Broadcasters Association that said, these are the parameters. And for the West Slope, it was Jason Blevins, who's been a very long, you probably know Jason, very long time Eagle County resident, who happens to work for a statewide publication. But was that West Slope entity. So that's why.
Thank you. I just want to note for the record, as the senator for Grand County, that they have a local newspaper, the Sky High Daily News. There's also, a company that operates several of the newspapers in the area, and seems that it was in a newsworthy event for their community. But that's in the past. I'm curious what, moving forward, and the wolves that we did get and reintroduced, and the agreement with the tribe in Washington going forward, how much does it cost for Colorado to get those wolves? What did Oregon charge? What is the tribe asking for?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that question. So there was no charge on a per wolf basis, and the tribe has not asked for that as well. Now, it is common to trade wildlife between agencies. There has been some requests for that to repay, but we have not paid a dollar amount. There are fees associated with the helicopter contracts and those type of things, but we did not pay the state of Oregon directly for wolves.
Okay. So the reason for my questions previously are, in our communities where this has now happened, there seems to be an extreme loss of trust and collaboration that used to exist between residents and CPW. And of course, this is controversial, and I agree with your comments about keeping your staff safe. That is not anything that I think is invalid. But there does seem to be a disconnect between what was promised and what happened. And when that happens, people lose trust. I've heard from constituents of mine across my district, I know others on the panel have as well, that they are going to close their gates. They don't want to work with CPW officers anymore. They feel that there was a directive sent from higher up that those CPW officers couldn't talk to anybody about this. They can't talk to them about what the state's doing moving forward. And that's a concern. We need that local collaboration between private landowners, between outfitters, between communities, both elected and non-elected officials, and your department. Do you agree that there's been a huge loss of trust as the result of what happened on December 18th, both leading up to and after? And what is your department doing to fix that? Yeah. Director Gibbs.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. I would tell you that it has, just thinking of Representative Holter's question earlier on mental health challenges for the agriculture community on wolves, I would say it is equal to the challenges of our CPW staff, that many of them feel like they are breaking the law, if you will, by implementing Proposition 114, because, as you know, there are neighbors. I live in the same community as you, and when folks go to the grocery store or post office, they feel like criminals because they're implementing 114. And so we are, that's part of our strategy as we look at our after action review to really help support our staff. And I will say that's accurate in terms of there are landowners that were willing to work with us on conservation efforts that are now telling our staff, hey, I don't really want to work with you anymore. And that's painful because the majority of wildlife live on private lands, even though we have a lot of public lands in the West Slope. So we recognize we have a lot of work to do to work with stakeholders to repair relationships. I know, Director Davis, you've had just some meetings last week with key leadership from agriculture. And we do want to try to figure out a way because we need to work with everyone, and wolves will be going on federal lands, they'll be going on private lands, and we need to have trust, we need to be responsive, and we're learning.
Okay. Thank you. I think since we've started this topic, I'll save my question on water for later and go to our next legislator, Representative Lukens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director Gibbs and everyone else for being up here and giving the overview of everything that DNR is doing. It's so important to my district, and so thank you for that. I represent the most northwest corner of the state, and although wolves were not reintroduced into my district, there have been sightings of wolves in Rout County. The video of the wolves being released, the video scene across the western slope was a very hard and scary video for folks to see in my district. I want to echo everything that Senator Roberts asked. Those were great questions, and I want to put a fine-tooth comb on a few things. One, I understand that there will be 15 more wolves reintroduced in the coming years on behalf of House District 26. Please do not release more wolves on the western slope. I know that that's not part of the plan, but I just wanted to say that. Two, in regards to the pool reporters, there were many rural western slope journalists that were left out. And even if they weren't included in the exact release, they also were not sent the press release either from the pool report. And that was very unfortunate because our western slope journalists are so essential to our small towns across the western slope. My first question is in regards to the wolves that have already come naturally into Colorado from Wyoming. According to the rules in Wyoming, Oregon, and Idaho, the wolves in Jackson County are chronic depredators. What is the definition of chronic depredation in Colorado, and what is the plan to have a reasonable definition if we don't have one?
Director Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little surprised to hear that the two individual wolves in North Park meet the criteria for the states that you referenced. That's not my review of those, but we can talk more about that part. Lots of questions, as you might imagine, coming from the North Park individuals, right? And my response in particular to some of the chronic depredation requests. It's our goal is to review all of those states that have wolves and what they put into their chronic depredation definition and figure out criteria, because part of what Director Gibbs was saying is pausing. We could have put five more wolves out this year. We could have done that. But out of like Representative Holtorf's concern, the concern that I shared with Director Gibbs about our own staff safety and health and well-being and the health and well-being of the individual animals that we did release, it was important for us to like pause, catch our breath with everybody, focus on rebuilding that trust. Part of that, in my experience, is there's a whole bunch of uncertainty. And to your point, Representative Holtorf, like agriculture has uncertainty on top of uncertainty on top of uncertainty, and we just put another one out there, right? So we have to work to rebuild that trust. What I've said, Senator Roberts, in regards to rebuilding that trust is I'm going to continue to go to the Livestock Association meetings, and I'm going to continue to show up. I'm going to continue to listen to understand and do what we can to remove those uncertainties and make sure that we're doing the other part of this plan. It's not just restoration of wolves. It's avoiding and minimizing conflicts with livestock. So We'll continue to do that, and we're working on the definition and the criteria moving forward. Now, I will say this: went to the Cattlemen's Association annual meeting. I feel like as a person who has some wolf exposure in my background, I think folks want a very black and white definition, and I just caution the Cattlemen's Association, like, we're probably going to find out that we want a little bit of flexibility in there. Like, definitely you want to know when we're hitting that threshold. But we're also going to want some flexibility because we can't, in our rules or at a legislative statutory level, it would be at a really high elevation, and it's going to probably mean that some people are going to meet something that we would say with the service that that's chronic depredation, but it doesn't meet it legally.
Rep. Lukens, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. My next question, which is actually my last question on this topic, what tracking device is CPW implementing, and how will CPW alert ranchers when wolves are nearby so they can protect their livestock?
Mr. DeWalt.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And happy to discuss that in more detail. So currently all the wolves that we have in Colorado have a GPS collar on them. And I think it's important to talk about what those collars can and can't do. I think there's a misunderstanding that those can tell us exactly where those wolves are at any minute. And the way those collars work is that they tell us where they've been. So what happens is they collect a point from the satellite every 4 hours. And once we receive four of those positions, it downloads to our computer so that we can see where they've been. So I just need to clarify that misunderstanding. Like there's really no way to tell where they are. It's also our plan as wolves get on the ground, all the wolves that are released will be collared, but as they reproduce, those offspring will not have collars. So I think that needs to be the expectation going forward as to what the public should expect, is there will be animals out there that are not collared. I would like to, and I think it's all right to show it now, show where we're headed with all of this. Let me pull up my talking points here. But we just put on our website a piece of information that just 30, 40 minutes ago that shows the location of all wolves in Colorado. And this is what's live on our website currently. And so I'd like to explain that a little bit because I think this will be an important tool going forward so folks have an understanding of where wolves are occupied and where they're not as well. So if I could just spend a minute explaining this. So like I said, we just released this on our website today, and this will inform our public where wolves have been in the past month. This map will be updated with new information on a monthly basis, and we're going to produce that on every fourth Wednesday of every month, give or take holidays and those type of things. So again, this map has been created using our GPS collar data from the 12 wolves collared in Colorado. So this includes the 10 animals that we reintroduced from Oregon, and then the two collared wolves in North Park. So you'll see that northern part of the map. Those are the two collared wolves from North Park. So again, these collars are programmed to record a position every 4 hours. Once we have four locations, they're transmitted to our computers, and we can see where wolves have been. Sometimes that information can be delayed because of cloud cover, too heavy of terrain, or things like that. So it's not a perfect science, but it is pretty amazing that we have this ability. So we have our staff that we can learn where they've been, again, but we cannot tell where they are at the current point in time, and we cannot predict right now where they will go. And so we've had some requests for that specific GPS data, and that will not be shared just for the protection of those animals out there on the, and we do that with other collared wildlife as well. Let me explain this map a little bit further so that these locations you'll see are mapped by what's called a hydrologic unit code, and it depicts a watershed. And that's really important because wolves are far more likely to use the geographic features on the landscape rather than our created political boundaries. So this is what we call a HUC 10 scale, and this will help agricultural producers to be informed as to the general areas where wolf activity is known to exist without being too general. We looked at this at the county level, and if we were to show that, it would show wolves all the way to our western state line, and that's not appropriate. It's also not so specific that it sacrifices any protection of individual wolves. And I'm almost done, but there's a couple things that need to really be noticed, and I know a lot of people are listening about this. So this indicates at least one GPS point in these watersheds. But just because a watershed lights up It doesn't indicate that there's current wolf activity. And then also, like, if you were to look at this map with I-70, it shows wolves south of I-70. And I want to be very clear, wolves have not gone south of I-70. It's just the way our mapping program works, that's what lights up. So we have that information on our website as well. And then there will be times where we have to buffer these maps, especially during the denning season, because the activity over 30 days, it'll localize on a den. And you could actually go and find that specific den. So we reserve the right to buffer that data to protect those wolves when needed. So that's where we're headed with this. I hope that answers your question. And it's great to get this out. It took us a while to collect enough GPS points to actually make this map. We've done that now. And now we'll get on that regular cycle of updating this map.
Quick follow-up, Rep. Lukens.
Yes. Yeah. Can you just say for the record either the URL or where to find this website, and then, or this part of the website, and then also how do you plan on promoting this to Western Slope landowners?
Yes, thank you for that. So this, and I don't have the URL specifically right now, and somebody might be able to text that to me. But this will be found on our website, on our Wolf Resources page. A lot of great information there. And then what was the second part of your question?
How do you plan on promoting this to landowners on the Western Slope?
Okay, thank you. So there's a press release going out at the end of this hearing to promote it, and then also through those local livestock producer meetings that we constantly have. So a lot of different ways. Lots of press will be out, especially right now, to get this information out.
Thank you. Representative Holtorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, your wolf release was a dismal failure for Colorado ranchers and for county commissioners and the communities where these wolves are right now habiting based on that map and where they will move to. Understand that. It will be near impossible for you to win back the trust of Colorado ranchers. There are five Colorado ranchers in front of you in this front row, maybe six. Maybe seven. Our memories are very long. A wolf is an apex predator that wants to kill. And cattle and calves are an easy target. Like in Ag Committee, I mentioned, the wild horses and the foals are an easy target for wolves. So how do you win back the trust of people when you release an apex predator anywhere near their ranches that they know are going to kill their livestock? It's paramount to putting a child predator in a grade school and expecting a different outcome. I want people to think about that behind me, because this is what's happening to the ranching community. And that's undeniable. The fact that you have to remind us that a wolf is a carnivore is laughable. We saw the pictures of the wolf that was released, and it is exactly what we're getting. A vicious animal that kills, in some cases, for sport. Now, there's one member here before you that was a former member of the Rocky Mountain Wool Growers Association, because my dad and I ran a flock of sheep. If you ever had a dog that killed sheep and got the taste of blood, what did you have to do to that dog? Because it would not stop. You had to put the dog down. There was one cure, just like a bear that comes into a community and kills a human. There's one cure. I don't believe you have the provisions for that. You need to look at the Wyoming model and figure that out. The fact that the wolves that came in from Oregon are predators, known predators, that came into Colorado, knowing the taste of blood, has put every rancher at jeopardy. It's your responsibility to vet that. So, ranchers are not happy. This rancher's not happy. And I don't live in the mountains. I live on the Eastern Plains. Now, I see your map goes all the way up to Larimer County. Well, a wolf can travel 70 to 100 miles in a couple, 2 or 3 days if they want. How long is it going to take them to get to my backyard? Now, I want to talk about mental health, because I'm having a mental health crisis right now just thinking about what we're talking about in this hearing as a Colorado rancher. Because you know what? For the people behind me and in front of me, it's frightening. It's frightening. Think about the picture you saw in the newspaper. It's frightening to see that animal come out of that cage at a dead run, seeing what it really is, a vicious apex predator. I think we need to understand that and know what we're dealing with. This isn't some fuzzy little bunny that we just released in the backyard. Now, here's my question, because this is real. Mental health support to ranchers due to wolf predation. Where's the funding for that? Because how much can you take when you're being taken and you watch that blood spill? If you're not a cattle rancher as a third generation and you haven't grown up with this livestock and you care for them every day like your children, and then you see somebody take them like any murderer would murder one of your children or maybe one of your brothers and sisters.
Representative Holtorp.
Yes.
Please get to your question.
Okay, here's my question. But I'm saying this for emphasis because people in this room need to figure out what's happening in my community. This is not funny. And I don't know if you can fix this. Where's the funding for the mental health for my people and Colorado ranchers when this really bears down after you release 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 35, 40, I don't care how many wolves in the next 10 years. What happens to Colorado ranchers? Because we can only take so much. And money doesn't fix it. Money doesn't fix everything. This registered rancher right here, he might have a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $50,000 cow that is prime pedigree in the Red Angus bloodline that he's worked. What? You're black now? Dang it, Black Angus bloodline. The point is this. The point is this. You take decades to build that pedigree. And then it's just going to be given away by a wolf that murders one of your cows. And you think money's going to fix that? And then this rancher here, registered breeder, because I feel for the registered breeders. They're the ones that really suffer. Because they work a lot harder at their bloodlines and their pedigrees than commercial cattlemen do. And that's just a fact.
Representative.
So there's the question, ma'am. I'll stop talking and see if we can answer that and figure that out. You owe it to Colorado and you owe it to Colorado ranchers to figure that out. Thank you.
Who? Yes, Director Gibbs.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Holtorp, for your comments. We've been working really hard to work with agriculture community and really everyone to try to figure out a sweet spot in the wolf management plan where agriculture, had a seat at the table, had a voice heard for that. And, we were being consistent with the plan. So agriculture has had a voice, at the table from day one in terms of developing how we manage wolves right now. Mental health issues is something that hits everyone. And I recognize that the agriculture community faces a lot of challenges right now. And I'm very, my heart pours for you and your family and other folks that have really thinking about this and how it impacts them. I do know we have this new partnership with Department of Agriculture. I know after us, you'll hear from Commissioner Greenberg, who's probably in back of me somewhere, and Jordan Beasley. And Department of Agriculture, as you probably know, has really been a lead on mental health for farmers and ranchers. And I understand they'll be able to speak to what they're doing, but it's something that every department really works hard to tackle because mental health hits everyone. But Department of Agriculture is really will be a lead on that particular component on behavioral health.
Okay. Sorry, did I miss something? Here's what we have going on here, people. Unfortunately, I'm in the driver's seat and I have to watch the clock. I have 7 people so far on my list for questions. I want you to be aware of the time and that Department of Ag is waiting to come. They have a 45-minute presentation. I want them to have the ability to answer questions. I know that everyone in this room is available for any follow-up discussions that any committee members need to have with any of our presenters today. I wish I had control of our scheduling and our clock, but I don't. So, Representative Soper, you're up next, and I'll try to get through this list of 7 people before we get to the Department of Ag.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Director Gibbs.
Really quick, I appreciate, you know, and we can try to do a speed round if possible, because we do want to try to get the answers.
I agree.
But we're happy to show up in your office after or tomorrow, and
Thank you. Just know
that if you don't get a chance, we'll make sure we follow up with you.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they're willing to do that as well. So, Representative Soper.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Director Gibbs and Mr. Davis, and also appreciate your time as well tomorrow with the delegation. My question for you is, you know, I represent a heavy agricultural region in Colorado, Delta and Mesa counties, but it's also a major outdoor rec and tourism region in Colorado. According to Dean Runyon report, Colorado's tourism economy is a $27.9 billion industry for our state. It's the number one economic driver in our state. And yet wolves definitely pose a threat to that industry. And then it poses a threat to our number two industry at $20 billion, which is our agricultural industry. We've heard a lot about the agricultural industry. I want to talk about the tourism industry. What are you doing to really help those Coloradans or perhaps visitors that come to our great state who are going to be in the great outdoors and finding themselves in conflict with wolves? I mean, we don't necessarily expect someone who's coming here from out of state to bring a firearm, though I will tell you that makes sense. I, you know, always go out to the great outdoors with my gun. But I also know that there's a lot of people who come to our state who don't. And how can they be kept safe? How can they have assurances from Colorado Parks and Wildlife and our state that they will be safe when they're hiking, when they're climbing a mountain, when they're exploring the great outdoors, that they're not going to be just prey for a wolf?
Director Gibbs?
Yeah, maybe I'll kick it off and maybe turn over to Reed and Jeff. But yeah, the outdoor recreation tourism industry is a huge part of our economy, which I live in, really an epicenter area. And as you know, I have little kids. I have a six-year-old and a nine-year-old. I believe that wolves on the ground will not have an impact on outdoor recreation and tourism. I would personally not hesitate for one second to take my kids backpacking, and I'm a gun owner, but I would not bring a gun out of concern of a wolf attack or anything. I think we need to start thinking about how we live with wolves, just like we do how we live with moose that have attacked, how we live with bears, how we live with mountain lions. And I see there's no difference in all that. Like, we need to live with the species that we have. How do we coexist? And Parks and Wildlife, in my opinion, has done a really good job of fact sheets. If you get look on the website of living with wolves and so forth, and maybe you can help, you know, get the word out of what's fact from fiction, because there is a lot of misinformation out there with wolves, and maybe I'll turn it over to Reed and Jeff to just elaborate a little more.
Does anyone want to follow up? Mr. Davis? No? Yes?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Like, I agree with what Director Gibbs has said. I hail from Washington State, setting my roots down here in Colorado, hopefully for a really long time, and recreation has not been impacted by in Washington State. Now, it's not the same scope and scale, obviously, as the beauty of nature here and the outdoor experiences, but they have, I want to say, about 270 wolves, and have had those for almost two decades now. So we haven't, in my experience, I hadn't observed the safety issues that you're concerned about.
Very quick follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick follow-up. Now that the tenets of 114 really have been fulfilled, I have seen wolves on the ground, not personally, but at least through the news, would the department consider releasing the additional wolves east of the Continental Divide so that at least the entire state gets to have the full impact, not just one side of the state?
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that Prop 114 very specifically said west of the Continental Divide, so I think we would need statutory direction and or a citizen initiative to implement that.
Next question goes to Senator B. Pelton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first of all, I just would like to say I appreciate the fact that you guys have that you've apologized and you're doing an after action report. You know, I've had several conversations with both Director Gibbs and Director Davis. I appreciate that aspect of it. My problem is that when you grow up, and I'm just going to touch a little bit on what Representative Holtorf says, when you grow up raising cattle and you are doing everything you can to protect the livestock that you are a guardian over, people don't understand the reason why you protect them is not only because that's your income, that's your livelihood, but you don't want to see them suffer. You grow up your entire life to make sure that those animals never suffer. They have everything they need to eat. They have everything, all the water they can drink. And you make sure that you you are good stewards of those animals. When you put a rancher in a situation where he has to watch his animal be attacked, what do you guys, are you guys going to allow that rancher to be able to protect his livestock if it's being attacked? How many animals have to go down before that rancher has that ability to protect his livelihood, to protect that animal? The well-being, I've heard you talk about the well-being of your staff. I've heard you talk about the well-being of the wolf. But what about the well-being of the livestock?
Yes, Mr. Davis.
Thanks, Madam Chair. In the plan and in our 10J, a rancher that sees a wolf attacking their livestock can lethally remove that wolf as caught in the act.
One
follow-up. Yes, Senator Pelton.
A lot of times these animals hunt at night. It is illegal to hunt at night, as my fellow, the DOW officer over there sitting at the end, Senator will attest. Can we protect our animals at night as well?
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are going through that question right now with the Attorney General's office and getting a pathway forward for that question.
So if there's any legislation that need to come from that, please come see me, because I would love to run that bill to make sure that our livestock owners are able to protect our animals and able to shoot animals at night if they're being attacked. So thank you.
Representative Catlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for being here today. I've got a question. First off, it's real short. Where's the next place you're going to put wolves?
Mr. Davis.
Do I have to?
I guess so.
Suffice to say, we're still in lots of conversations about whether that will be in the northern bubble as identified in the plan or whether that will be in the southern bubble. Lots of conversations with stakeholders. We've been in ongoing conversations with the Gunnison livestock growers. We have two tribes, as you know, that are very concerned and paying attention to where those future releases will go.
Well, thank you for answering that. Gunnison believes they're next. And they're suffering from lack of trust, something fierce. The idea of advance notice and these kind of things has really got to get to be something that's a priority. You know, you've heard a lot about all these other things, but what this one's about is they need to know. They need to know as quickly as they can. They need to be notified. And I'm going to ask straight out, will you take that upon yourselves to notify that grower group in the Gunnison country? Because it's a big deal. We're talking about you getting an opportunity to rebuild trust, and that'd probably be the best place you could start. Because right now they're feeling like they've been left out. They don't know where they're at. And you know, I can't blame them for contacting me about that, because I'm ended up being their spokesperson. So I want to talk about that. And the second thing I want to talk about, is there any opportunity in DNR to start taking a look at, we went about finding out how to reimburse people that have losses. But there is an incredible amount of expense looking at these folks in trying to keep the wolves out of them. And it looks to me like if we could cooperate as the state between keeping the wolves out of these herds, we wouldn't have nearly the expense of trying to replace animals that have got the breeding and all the things that everybody is valuing. Is there any idea in DNR to start looking at how you can cooperate with the people that are actually taking care of your wolves? You know, they're out there in their country, and non-lethal things that can be done, not just prayer rags and those kind of things, but an opportunity to work with a grower in a cooperative basis because they're your animal and these guys are trying to protect their animal. Is there any opportunity for that?
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Absolutely. Maybe I start with the first. So as I mentioned, as we start to consider what future releases look like, definitely along the way, that's huge stakeholder conversations, right? I will say that we did, and this I don't mean this to sound defensive, but we did share in prior to the first release with local livestock producers, either in their meetings that we were invited to or meetings that we called them to participate in, what the window of releases were in which counties, right? And I know that's not the call the neighbor piece. We're working on how can we do that and maintain that information and the safety of everything involved. So I feel like we're going to do, I know we will do a better job in future releases on that early notice point that you're making. The second part is you all have done amazing work in last session in funding, heavily funding non-lethal programs, including depredation reimbursements. So, and you'll hear, I think you heard in Director Gibbs' presentation that myself and Commissioner Greenberg entered into an MOU. So CPW CDA have an MOU, and the real purpose of that is to make sure that we both have adequate capacity. We didn't talk about six conflict specialists that we're adding to, because what we don't want is we don't want the ranchers to have to like sit through a bunch of big burdensome paperwork stuff and be called off what they're trying to do. So we want to be there with folks prior to things going down. You're absolutely right. In my experience, if you have effective non-lethal programs, you will significantly minimize the potential for loss of livestock. And so we have our wolf plate, that all the revenue from that will go directly to the non-lethal equipment. Lots of training going on right now. It was happening before and will continue, especially thanks to the support of an additional capacity that CDA will bring to that conversation. There's things like range rider programs and carcass disposal. So I think we're set up now. Just like in the planning of this operation, you never totally know. You never have 100% certainty of how it will play out. So I will say I think we got an amazing start, and we'll probably need to be coming back to you to keep you posted on how those programs are operating.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Velasco.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So I have a couple flags to raise, and you know, we can continue conversations at a later time, but I had conversations with our tribal leaders, and there was major concerns around communication, notification, engagement, also those concerns around the land that they manage in Gunnison County, and them not being involved enough with the planning of the wolf reintroduction. Also, I represent a district in the Western Slope and would love to continue to be involved in future releases and future, continue with that engagement. I represent Garfield, parts of Eagle, and Pitkin, and there's also major concerns around dealing with wildlife in our mountain towns. So definitely very interested in continuing the conversation and looking forward to solutions on how to better engage and have better communication. Thank you.
No question, just comment. Okay, Representative Martinez, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first and foremost, thank you all for coming and giving us an update today. We appreciate that. So my question pertains to a conversation that we had, or in the committee meeting that we had earlier this summer, in regards to the resources that you're gonna be providing to the farmers and ranchers that were released in the area. And you talked about a lot of like fencing, non-lethal material to being able to help really address their concerns and being able to really help them out, fortify their position. I'm curious how many, or I guess dollar value, how much have you put on the ground both prior and after the releases? And what is your plan long-term for future releases to being able to get those resources out, up, and available to help them?
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have to get back to you on what we've expended. I do know we expended resources and we have stashes around the areas that we expect livestock producers to need those resources. I know we're not the only one. USDA also, we're coordinating with them and have stashes of non-lethal techniques or equipment. Am I not getting to your question? I'm sorry.
Representative Martinez. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess let me be explicit with this. So in the committee meeting, you did talk about those stashes and that you did have some material that was already available for them, and this was back in September. And I asked the same question in that committee meeting as well, too. When are we gonna get that material out to them and have it up available and ready? So we did talk about the stashes, I was aware of that, but I'm curious as to, has those actually been in place or put in place and are up and available for those farmers and ranchers in those areas today?
Mr. Davis.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you for that clarification. I'll have to get back to you on how much of those resources have been deployed into what specific areas. We have a conflict specialist, a non-lethal conflict specialist that's been doing that work for us. The good news for him is he had his first child, and so he's been out the last week or so, but I will check in with him to see how much we've deployed and where those deployments have been and get back to you.
Follow-up, yes.
One last one. Thank you, Madam Chair. So is there a plan for these future releases to have this implemented prior to the release in that area for the future releases?
Mr. Davis.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I will have to ask what that plan is. What I would say is we release these wolves. Livestock producers know this, like springtime is the big concern. The 10 wolves that we have released right now, they have not had any depredation problems. That's not to say that they won't down the road by any means. But the timing of the releases itself and where we do those is really important to minimize the potential for depredations on livestock in particular in the vicinity. But I will get back to you also with what that plan is moving forward on making sure that we have full deployment in those particular areas.
Representative Winter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To piggyback off my colleague from the San Luis Valley, a question I have is we know that the wolf's an apex predator, highly intelligent. From some of the research I've done, it seems to be showing that these non-lethal techniques, they tend to outsmart them after a while. They tend to figure out a way around them. They're not as fearful. So do you guys have any data on the cost effectiveness on this stuff? How long it lasts, how long it's good for, and at what point is it not effective at all anymore? That's my first question.
Mr. Davis.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll share my experience. My experience is utilizing as many non-lethals as possible and moving them around and changing them up is critically important to their effectiveness over time. I'll also say another key piece is the range riders. Having human presence out there is another really important non-lethal tool. And like I mentioned earlier, the carcass disposal is another critical piece. If we have a carcass out there, inevitably it will draw in, as you all know, carnivores and create bigger problems. So using the non-lethal techniques that we have, that's not to say that we're not also pursuing conversations with technology companies that have artificial intelligence that are systems for reducing human wildlife conflict. So we're not done. We want to be the innovator here in states with wolves and make sure that we're deploying new technologies at the same time and testing those.
I want to understand your point of view. Just to comment on that before my next question is I think everybody watches TV and figures everybody is a Yellowstone rancher with a helicopter and 50 people working for them. But in the real world in rural Colorado, there's very few of us doing that job. So range riders and moving non-lethal methods around the ranch is pretty low on the list of what we have to do. The second question I have is simple. We've talked about transparency. We've talked about being honest with the people of Colorado. Right now, I represent southeastern corner in the Eastern Plains. We say that it may take a statutory change for wolves to be released over there, but as we know, they will migrate past I-25, and they at some point will end up on the Eastern Plains. What I ask from you today is your commitment that you will be fully transparent and that you will ring the alarm and the bell when you see those wolves coming across I-25 into House District 47 and the Eastern Plains. And today, will you commit to me and my constituents that if we see this coming across I-25, that they will know way ahead of time and they won't feel on the outs like the folks that have spoke before about finding out post-fact or undercover? That's the only question I have. Thank you.
Mr. Davis.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Here's what I will say. Reed talked about having 12 collars on 12 wolves in Colorado right now. He also mentioned that these things will have offspring and we will not have collars on those animals. So your question to me puts me in a tough spot to say at some point in time, we're going to have wolves that we won't know where they are, when they're there, where they've been. And so I'd be lying to you if I could make that commitment right here in this hearing. That's not to say that we won't try to have conversations if we see something coming.
Representative Story.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank Director Gibbs and Director Davis and Assistant Director Reed. Reed? No, I'm sorry. Trying to remember. DeWalt, for being here and your teams. And I know it's been a challenging time with all the work over the last several years in particular and recently, but I appreciate the work that's been going on and your efforts going forward as this process continues, because obviously it will. You mentioned the MOU, Director Gibbs, between CPW and the Colorado Department of Agriculture regarding conflict prevention and sort of the work that's gone on there. I could you share some of the, prime elements in that MOU with us, just so there's a better understanding of what that discussion looks like? And then I would have just one follow-up after that.
Director Gibbs?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. The agreement was actually, with Department of Ag and Colorado Parks and Wildlife. We don't have the MOU right in front of us, but maybe Director Davis, you want to talk about a little bit of the high points, or maybe Reed may have that information.
Director Davis.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm sure Commissioner Greenberg probably has that. what I'd say is there's like community
Communication, so the higher themes as part of the MOU, communication and coordination, education and outreach, and non-lethal deployment. Like, those are the three biggies. There's another one in there that I don't remember off the top of my head, but really the purpose is that we're many hands make light work. So how do we make sure that CPW stays focused on the wildlife management component of this, and that CDA, with their expertise, is paying attention to the husbandry side of the wolf story and non-lethal conflict.
Follow up, Representative Story.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been mentioned several times about the non-lethal coexistence measures, and I think those are, as you said, are a part of the MOU as well, but there's been discussion beyond the MOU about these measures. Can you share, the use of those measures, and if it's just applicable from research or from use over time, just applicable for use with wolves in particular, or does it apply broader to carnivores in general relative to, you know, conflict prevention with livestock and humans?
Mr. DeWalt.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And I think it's good to remember that we have other carnivores on the landscape as well, with mountain lions and black bears being major carnivores as well. And we've lived with them for hundreds of years. And so we have a longstanding tradition here in Colorado of a what we call our game damage program. And we do provide those preventative techniques as well for bear and lion damage as well. We also provide it for ungulates, such as an elk in a haystack or something like that. So there's a long tradition of that. There's different techniques you use between the species for different reasons. But yeah, there's a long history within CPW of preventing carnivore damage and then compensation for it as well.
Senator Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some questions about a topic other than this that I'll get to.
Is that okay with you all?
Yes.
Down there at the table? Okay.
I guess just to put a button on it, though, we're here because of a citizen-led ballot initiative that has to deal with a very complicated and complex biological and species management process. Obviously, a lot of years went in between the passage of Prop 114 and December 18th of 2023, but even that three-year period seemed to have not been enough time to get all of the details in place. And, you know, with respect to all the work that went in, ballot box biology is messy, and I don't think the right way forward for Colorado, obviously not on the wolf issue, but that's already happened. We do have some ballot measures being proposed coming forward. I would hope that CPW, DNR can help use your expertise and help us talk to the public about the ramifications of those ballot measures. I understand there might be reasons why you can't take a position either way, but it's my understanding in the past, the state government hasn't been as transparent or helpful as they could have been educating the public about what a yes or no vote on a ballot measure might result in. So that's just looking forward, as much as we've looked back, looking forward. Some of these decisions might be in front of every Coloradan again on their ballot this year and future years. And I wish that weren't the case, but that's the process we have in Colorado. So with regards to building trust and reestablishing trust, you know, I think that's a role that CPW could play moving forward, and hope that that can happen. We have Director Mitchell, Director Riss, thank you for your patience. I would love to ask a question about water, unless you want to comment on wolves, which I guess you don't.
I was just going to remind the committee that the wolves need water, too.
So thank you for being here and for your patience through the other discussion. We could talk about water for many hours as well. My question is, Colorado does have a historic opportunity in terms of funding for water through the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed 2 years ago, $4 billion allocated.